It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia,
France,
Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Praise his holy name. We are hot on both streams, White Rose Society and HeadOn.live. That coming from Brother Deacon Asa. It is the fourth day of December 2019. This is the Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that's your home for all your podcasting needs now that the podcasting problem is all solved. Yes, it is. And it's also where you go if, for instance, you would like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is the Horn chat room. Looks like I'm moderating this evening because, of course, Sparky takes the takes Wednesdays off like doctors do. Anatole and Squeaky are eagerly waiting for you. If you've never been there before, just click on chat room at headon.live, pick out a screen name and a password, and run, and you will be immediately greeted with great warmth and respect. Holiday, hi, how are yous, and stuff like that. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. I confess I'm a little bit intellectually exhausted this evening. These days, these long hearing days, kind of do that. I sat and I watched the whole impeachment hearing thing in real time. It was something. I mean, that's not to say the witnesses were bad, but lo and behold, the guy I thought was going to be pro-Trump wasn't. And the star of the show turned out to be Professor Kaplan from out Stanford way. And just wow. And we'll get to all of that in a moment. It's prayer meeting Wednesday, of course, on the Horn, brethren and sistren. And I got to tell you, let's do the thanks first. Every program here at the Horn begins with thanks. Thanks to our subscribers this evening. That's thanks to Thomas and Catherine. Thanks to Nagla and Paul. And thanks to Maddie. Thank you very kindly, one and all, for being partial sponsors of the program. Thank you very kindly. And thanks go out to Samson. Because as of last night, thanks to, among others, Paul and Charles. Well, Paul and Charles, we finished fundraising last night, and Paul and Charles jumped in and said, hey, let's get started on Wednesday. And so they did, and Samson finished it off this evening. We have no fundraising goal for this evening, which is awesome, which means that the deacons get the night off. And it's just as well that they do because, well, they OD'd on tryptophan last week, and the little old blue-haired ladies in the Fellowship Hall kitchen, not being wasteful sorts, had some extra turkey left over. And it makes perfect sense when you think about it. But whoever thinks about turkey and dumplings? Well, the little old blue-haired ladies did. I guess they had a couple of birds left over, and they made these massive pots of turkey broth. Then they pulled the turkeys out. They tore the turkey up into pieces, and I have a feeling there'll be turkey carcass soup come next week, because that's a whole bunch of turkey carcasses they got left, stashed away on the stashed away in the walk-in in the fellowship hall kitchen refrigeration area. Yep. But they made turkey and dumplings. Rich, rich turkey broth, pieces of white meat turkey and dark meat turkey. And of course, once they got the broth up to a full roll and boil, the little old blue-haired ladies of the fellowship hall kitchen, being past masters at biscuit making, well, making dumplings was nothing. And so they would, just handful by handful, one by one, they dropped the dumplings into that boiling turkey broth. They covered it up. They let them steam. And, oh, how heavenly they were. And so as everybody passed through the cafeteria line, everybody knew that they were going to have a rib-sticking good meal, because it was kind of cold today. Right now, at this particular moment in the fabulous Horn Studios at the magnificent Kincaid Mansion, let alone here in the pulpit of the Cathedral of Common Sense, we got 63 degrees. But, oh my God, the deacons landed on the turkey again, and I got to confess that, well, afterwards and after the yellow cake with the caramel icing and everything that went with the turkey and dumplings, they were staggering before they even got to the first flight of stairs. And so they stumbled and trundled their massive bulk up the couple of flights of stairs. They went up and out into the parking lot and set to smoking with the sinners, just trying to stay awake. They didn't realize they were going to get the night off. And they did about a half a pack of cigarettes, chain smoking with the sinners. And Sister Carol Baker showed up at the vestibule door with the cathedral's solar-powered cattle prod. They took one look at that, and they couldn't even work up a good fear. And, you know, the fear of Sister Carol is the beginning of wisdom, as it says in the good book. And so they waddled, and they stumbled, and they staggered, whacked out of their minds on tryptophan. And they meandered down the center aisle, and then they plopped on their massive fundaments, and there they sit now, and there's not a one of them awake, except for Brother Deacon Asa. And so there they are. Fortunately, they don't have to work. But, brethren and sistren, it is prayer meeting Wednesday on the Horn, and there's no plate to be passed. Hallelujah, glory. And so we can get into the business of the day. I reckon part of the reason maybe the deacons were prone to being wiped out by the tryptophan was, like me, you know, in the cathedral, we keep C-SPAN or MSNBC or some sort of news channel on at all times. I've had all of the TVs at the cathedral modified so that they will not tune to Fox News TV Radio Rwanda or that other network. What is it? Onan, the channel that spills its news upon the ground. But there's all, and so everybody watched in rapt attention as the hearings went down. And when it come time for Jonathan Turley to talk, everybody was kind of scratching their heads. Because whereas the other law professors were making sense, Jonathan Turley sounded like he was just waiting for the check to clear. It was kind of like something Todd from South Carolina Stan messaged earlier asking, is Turley on the take? Well, kind of, yeah. I mean, you got to remember, this is a guy who back in the 90s said it was absolutely necessary. The Republic could not long survive unless we impeached Bill Clinton over lying about an act of consensual oral sex. Whoo, by golly, he sat there back in the late 90s, and he postulated and pontificated and opinionated all about how that was exactly, it was exactly what the framers had in mind. Oddly enough, today, where you've got a case of a president actively selling out his own country in an act of bribing or shaking down another country in exchange for the announcement of a bullshit investigation against his one of the people he most fears politically. Well, suddenly Jonathan Turley had a change of heart, and gosh, the impeachment process was going too fast, and it was too narrowly defined. He was the witness that was called by the minority side, the part of the committee that's headed by Doug Mouthful of Bubblegum Collins, as well as Louis Asparagus Gohmert and Jim Shorts Jordan, who can't see any impeachable offenses, just like Jim Shorts Jordan couldn't see any rapes of young athletes taking place back when he was an assistant wrestling coach at The Ohio State University. All kinds of things Jim Shorts Jordan can't see right in front of his face. You'll recall that when a wrestling referee said that he had been subjected to sexual abuse by Dr. Strauss, the response of Jim Shorts Jordan was, "Well, yeah, that's Richard." Which leads one to think that maybe Richard was a grabbing of Jim Shorts Jordan's Richard, and that Jim Shorts Jordan must have just kind of liked it. "Yeah, well, that's just Richard." Reminds me of the old joke that, well, the punchline is, "Oh, that? Yeah, don't worry about it. That's just Dad." Never mind, I'm not gonna, no. By the way, Todd asking, did Senator Kennedy of Louisiana attend the Louis Gohmert School of Public Speaking? Well, when it comes to John Kennedy of Louisiana, you have to remember that John Kennedy was once upon a time a Democrat. That's why his name's John Kennedy, John Neely Kennedy. Because he came from a Democratic family. And I guess they intended to honor JFK by giving him that name. But, some several years back, after a couple of failed political campaigns, John Neely Kennedy looked around him there in Louisiana Stan and realized that his political career was going to come to exactly dick. There we are again. If and he stayed a Democrat. So John Neely Kennedy decided to be a lickspittle and a turncoat. He decided that he would cast his lot with those folks down there in the ninth circle of hell, which, according to Dante, contains the betrayers. And so a while back, he betrayed the people of his party and became a Republican. So why is it any surprise that John Neely Kennedy finds it so goddamned easy now to betray his own country? All right? And he hides it behind that jubilation tea corn pone all shuck shit kicking bullshit act of his. But he's just a betrayer. That's all. Steve in New York pointing out, old Doug was just pissed that Kemp didn't appoint him senator. Georgia Governor Kemp, who shouldn't be governor, we should be talking about Georgia Governor Stacey Abrams, but that election was stolen. And yeah, he did. The maggots wanted Doug Collins appointed senator, and Kemp said, no, thank you. And instead appointed a fairly attractive youngish woman to be the senator who replaced Senator Johnny Isaacson. Yeah. Hey, thank you. Good to hear from you, Scott. Scott says, loud and clear here in San Diego. P.S. Reports of my having fallen off the planet have been totally exaggerated. Well, I was beginning to wonder, like I've said for the last couple of days, when we don't hear from you, we fret. And I figured maybe Scott took some sort of Thanksgiving vacation holiday to a fabulous and warm location. Maybe went a little further south down into Baja California or something and decided to have frosty cold margaritas by the Gulf of Cortez. No? Okay, well, good to hear from you, Scott. Good to hear from you. But it's been a long day. And it's challenging. I mean, this was when you got the four law professors opining away, it felt I'm not going to say PTSD, but it felt a little ish, because it felt like being in law school toward the end, you know, toward the end of the semester, and there's only one test. There's no tests along the way. There's one final fucking exam for each class, and you fucked that up, and you fucked everything up, and you failed the class, and goodbye. And so, you know, it's December. This is when the semester is winding down. And hearing four law professors go on and on felt a little like that, because I was just trying to keep up. And yeah, okay. And then we got to Jonathan Turley, and it was like, what the fuck is this? But then I realized that Jonathan Turley has been auditioning for this part on various TV programs, saying, oh no, we can't impeach, for months now. It's kind of the way that Bill Barr to prosecution auditioned for the AG job by hollering, oh, they spied on our president. Yeah, Ron and Raleigh reminding us, you realize that Judas Turley is a paid Fox contributor. The crux of Turley's argument is, since Trump obstructed every damn thing, nothing happened. This guy's respected? Not by me. And I have a feeling that whatever passed for a reputation that he had up until today, well, it got put paid to. And I knew we were in for some world-class 200-proof bullshit as quick as he started about talking in his opening statement about how the country's mad. I'm mad. You're mad. We're mad. They're mad. My wife's mad. My kids are mad. My dog's mad. And my dog's a golden doodle. And they don't get mad. Oh, shut up. And that line drew a polite titter from the assembled live audience. But for the most part, it exposed the partisan nature of his advocacy. He wasn't brought in there, Jonathan Turley, to actually talk about what the law meant. He was brought in there to say that Donald Trump must not be impeached. And there could not have been a broader chasm between the other three professors and him, because it was put, at least to me, seemed to present the issue in entirely stark terms. Either the three law professors from Harvard, UNC, and Stanford were wrong, or Jonathan fucking Turley, who was willing to, who said it was okay to impeach a president for a blowjob, was right. It was that plain. But yeah, he was there. You think maybe he'd like to have his hat in the ring, maybe next time there's a Supreme Court
seat opens up.
Now, Randy in PA says it's going to eventually come out that the intelligence community spied on all of the 2016 candidates because that's what they do. I'm not there yet. I don't necessarily agree. The reason that the intelligence community opened investigations, which is different from spying on, the Trump campaign was because they were running around all the time, swelling around with a bunch of fucking Russians. See? And among other things, well, there was that whole business where the Trump campaign aide got all wined up in a wine bar in London and started talking to an Australian diplomat about how important he was in the campaign and about all this stuff. All of the Russia had, and the contacts between the campaign and Russia, because he was kind of proud of it. That was right. That was not too long before he was found out by the dumpster puking up his toenails. But that's what got the ball rolling. The Australians called their buddies in the United States and said, "Hey, do you know this? That these people are wandering around saying this shit?" Although not in that accent. G'day, this is the Australian Embassy. Just wanted to give you a call, mate. Let you know that some of Donald Trump's boys are running around talking about the wonderful relationship they've got with a bunch of scumbag Russians. Didn't know if you knew. Thought you might need to. G'day. Yeah, that of course is, well, we'll wait for Ron and Raleigh on that one. But it didn't work out very well for either Doug Collins or Jonathan Turdley. Come on, you can't expect me to get through an entire three-hour program after his behavior and not refer to him as Jonathan Turdley. You get the idea. He was probably referred to that way most of the time growing up, and you know, back in seventh grade when he was getting a swirly at every hour on the hour. It got right silly. In an attempt to inject some humor, levity, humanity, nothing made the Republicans happy. They were upset about everything. Witness, man with a mouthful of cornmeal mush, Doug Collins.
By the way, just for the information, Mr. Chairman, this is the coldest hearing room in the world. And also, for those of you who are worried about I'm uncomfortable, upset, I'm happy as a lark, but this chair is terrible.
Yeah, he's about as funny as a fart in an elevator. Terrible. But then came this little moment.
On the other hand, he has actually released a lot of information. I've been friends with Bill Barr for a long time. We disagree on executive privilege. I'm a Madisonian scholar. I tend to favor Congress in disputes. And he is the inverse. His natural default is Article 2. My natural default is Article 1. But he actually has released more privileged information than any attorney general in my lifetime, including the Mueller report. These transcripts of these calls would be core executive privilege material. There's no question about that.
And I think that's something.
Yeah. He, like Bob Mueller, is dear, 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 goddamn dear friends with Bill fucking Barr. Good for them. Birds of a feather, you know. In this case, turkey buzzards. Didn't work out well. Citing your dear, 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 dear friendship with Bill Barr and claiming that he's open and transparent is not one of your better looks these days. Because even though he said, he's released all of this, this privileged information, that's only compared to the shit that he's refused. He damn sure didn't tell Nitwit Nero, hey, you better honor those congressional subpoenas because that's an impeachable offense. No, he said, brazen it out, boss. I'm your wartime consigliere, and let's go to the mattresses. Leave the subpoenas. Take the cannolis. Couldn't resist. But over on the Twitter, there were any number of people who said that the Bill Barr is my bosom buddy defense was the big tell. This explains why Turley's testifying, giving nonsensical bullshit arguments. He's a Bill Barr associate and friend of Bill Barr. Folks, well, that was somebody named Cencia. Miranda Yaver, Jonathan Turley, I've been friends with Bill Barr for a long time. Miranda says, I probably wouldn't advertise a close relationship with the AG, who seems to be on a mission to make John Mitchell look comparatively okay, and who's vulnerable to impeachment, too. Yeah, that was plenty. Steve in New York says, I had a friend who had him in law school. Turdly is appropriate because he was, in fact, a turd. Now, I can only imagine what a self-important prick he must be in the classroom. On the other hand, I looked at Professor Kaplan, and I thought, because this has always been one of my shortcomings. If I don't like this was my MO all through higher education and some high school too, as soon as I got a driver's license. If I couldn't stand to be in the class, I didn't go to the class. And so I sat there watching Professor Pamela Carlin from Stanford thinking, you know, this is probably what makes a Stanford law degree worth having. You get professors of this quality. Because the good professors, you could not keep me away from their classes. The bad ones, it took a cattle prod to get me into it. I went so far with one of the bad ones, and he said, oh, well, if you miss another class, I'm not going to let you take the exam. I said, well, we'll take that up with the university. But I said, if you want me in your classroom, why don't you start teaching? Instead of reading from the goddamn book. I read everything you read to us the next morning. He didn't like that very well. He was an asshole. Took the exam. Got my gentleman's C. The new senator in Georgia, Clarence, writes from South Carolina, the lady who was appointed to the Senate seat pulled a page out of Ambassador Sondland's playbook. She was a big-money donor to the Kemp campaign. Them there dollars can get you a job in Merca. Check out her wiki page. Oh, I know. She's some sort of money manager, whatever. But the maggots had a shit hemorrhage because they said, she's a never-Trumper. Because she has occasionally taken positions that are not completely worshipfully in line with Nitwit Nero. But no, she'll show up and she'll be a reliable no vote on impeachment. Be kind of funny if she wasn't, but I'm sure that was a conversation that was had. Ron and Raleigh writing, G'day. Good to hear from old Crocodile. Crocodile Kincaid. It's been too long. Do they have Thanksgiving down under? If they do, I hope you had a good one. Did you hear that old bar to prosecution threatening folks with the removal of police protection if they didn't respect their authority? Oh, yeah, I saw that. God, fascists gonna fash. You people need to be more respectful, or you may find yourself without police protection. Oh, you mean the cops won't come around and shoot our sons and daughters and murder them in cold blood and shit? That's one of those essential problems. None of these fuckers are ever addressed directly for the evil that they do. Stephen, New York, subject line, teacher in law school. I had a professor for remedies who used to talk about what types of shoes to buy. The crazy fact that a friend of his put a pool table in his living room. After that, I stopped showing up. It was my first day in law school. See? On the other hand, however, I bet Steve had some real dandies, too, and those you couldn't keep him away from, either. Never missed, no. And not because they entertained, but because they taught. They got outside the four corners of the horn book. And they made learning dynamic and real. Oh, and Steve, I got your other message about not forgetting. No worries, my friend. No worries. At your leisure. So, what I was saying earlier, Pamela Carlin turned out to be the real star of the program today. The other professors were quite good too. But she stole the show when she clapped back. And I mean, she clapped back at a professional level. At Doug mouth full of black-eyed peas, Collins. Because they had so many complaints, the Republicans did. And he thought he would be cute, Collins did, by saying that, oh, we got a bunch of egg-headed ivory tower law professors here, and don't none of them know nothing about none of the facts. In his opening diatribe. Professor Kaplan was having none of it. And Kyle with a note says, the way the police protect certain communities, them being without police protection might be actually be a blessing. That's what I was getting at. But anyway, back to Professor Kaplan, who blistered ranking minority member Doug Mouthful of Poke Salad Collins.
Mr. Chairman and members of the committee, thank you so much for the opportunity to testify. Twice I have had the privilege of representing this committee and its leadership in voting rights cases before the Supreme Court. Once when it was under the leadership of Chairman Sensenbrenner, and it's good to see you again, sir, and with Mr. Chabot as one of my other clients, and once under the leadership of Chairman Conyers. It was a great honor for me to represent this committee because of this committee's key role over the past 50 years in ensuring that American citizens have the right to vote in free and fair elections. Today, you're being asked to consider whether protecting those elections requires impeaching a president. That is an awesome responsibility. But everything I know about our Constitution and its values, And my review of the evidentiary record, and here, Mr. Collins, I would like to say to you, sir, that I read transcripts of every one of the witnesses who appeared in the live hearing, because I would not speak about these things without reviewing the facts. So I'm insulted by the suggestion that as a law professor, I don't care about those facts. But everything I read on those occasions tells me that when President Trump invited...
Oh, and by the way, what does Dickhead Dougie do? He starts fidgeting in that oh-so-uncomfortable chair and bouncing around like I don't know, Elmo on meth. And starts looking at his cell phone. You fuck. She tore him a new one, and he richly deserved it. You'll notice that the Republican... I watched the whole damn thing. I never saw the Republicans attacking any of the men. You know, just a little lady. She was probably hysterical. Yeah, right. But you can tell by the tone of her voice that she did not remotely appreciate being condescended to by the likes of Doug Mouthful of Grits Collins.
It's an awesome responsibility that everything I know about our Constitution and its values and my review of the evidentiary record, and here, Mr. Collins, I would like to say to you, sir, that I read transcripts of every one of the witnesses who appeared in the live hearing, because I would not speak about these things without reviewing the facts. So I'm insulted by the suggestion that as a law professor, I don't care about those facts. But everything I read on those occasions tells me that when President Trump invited, indeed...
The best part is when he reaches for his microphone button and she just keeps talking. And all of a sudden he realizes that if he says a goddamn word, he's going to wind up being carried out in a fucking basket in pieces. It was beautiful.
Demanded foreign involvement in our upcoming election. He struck at the very heart of what makes this a republic to which we pledge allegiance. That demand, as Professor Feldman just explained, constituted an abuse of power.
This is just a suggestion, but can we maybe... get Professor Kaplan to lead the prosecution when it moves into the Senate. You know, because you got some Republican lawyers in there who really think they're a bunch of somebodies. People like John Neely Kennedy. I may not know much because I'm an old country lawyer, but you know what? I know when the National Ruble Association checks are gonna clear, and that means there weren't no obstruction and there weren't no bribery, 'cause the check done cleared.
Indeed, as I want to explain in my testimony, drawing a foreign government into our elections is an especially serious abuse of power because it undermines democracy itself. Our Constitution begins with the words, "We the people," for a reason. Our government, in James Madison's words, derives all its powers directly or indirectly from the great body of the people.
Which is really kind of interesting because the preamble to the Constitution contains all the words that express the reason for the existence of the Constitution and of the United States of America itself. That it's a mission statement. It's a statement of purpose and principles. And yet, you know what? I could be wrong, but I think it was Fat Dead Tony Scalia who said that the preamble to the Constitution has no legal force and effect. No shit. That the preamble is just a verbal flourish, like someone does under their signature back
in the days when they dipped turkey quills in ink or some shit such as that. Just a reminder of who those people are. As to Doug Collins, Steve in New York says, oh, I can hear him now. Ah, come on, little lady. Don't get your panties in an uproar. Don't you know what your Bible says about speaking out loud? You should remain silent in the presence of the menfolk. And if you got anything to say, wait and ask your husband if it's all right when you get home, like Jesus wants you to. Oh, wait a minute. You one of them people that kill Christ? It, Ron and Raleigh. Subject line, nothing left. I hope they had a broom and dustpan to sweep up that smoldering pile of Collins' ash and crap. Oh, he went on to, well, you heard, he went on to piss and moan about how cold the room was. Subject line, when you say Doug Collins, you said a mouthful. Scott in San Diego says, I'm not sure it's mush or greens or grits or black-eyed peas. If I had to guess, I'd say Doug Collins is elocutionally encumbered by a mouthful of Trump. If something the size of a cocktail weenie constitutes a mouthful of anything, that is. Can I hear an ew? I think that's the first cowbell I've ever awarded for someone ruining dinner. In this case, in the Eastern Daylight Time Zone, and quite possibly in the Central as well. But it's hard to argue with Scott's thesis.
And the way it derives these powers is through elections. Elections matter, both to the legitimacy of our government and to all of our individual freedoms, because as the Supreme Court declared more than a century ago, voting is preservative of all rights. So it is hardly surprising that the Constitution is marbled with provisions governing elections and guaranteeing governmental accountability. Indeed, a majority of the amendments to our Constitution since the Civil War have dealt with voting or with terms of office. And among the most important provisions of our original Constitution is the guarantee of periodic elections for the presidency, one every 4 years. America has kept that promise for more than two centuries, and it has done so even during wartime. For example, we invented the idea of absentee voting so that Union troops who supported President Lincoln could stay in the field during the election of 1864.
Well, that's not going to win any friends over with the Republicans on the panel there. I mean, you got your Louis Asparagus Gohmert there, and you got your Doug Collins, and well, hell, even Jim Shorts Jordan, he probably would have been one of them disloyal Ohioans who went and fought for the treasonous, traitorous South. Well, how about that? Little lady, I didn't know that. That damned old Lincoln. Got a lot of damn nerve not making the troops come home to vote. I always knowed Lincoln was an un-American one. It has now concluded, Sparky tells me. Screwy Louis Asparagus Gohmert, done throwed a fit, with a unanimous consent request that the chairman would not hear. Oh, hopefully that'll be up as a clip sometime soon. It's always rather you watch Louis Asparagus Gohmert throw fits, and you think, you know, one of these days he's gonna let go of one of these and top of his little punkin' head just gonna come right off. Thanks, Sparky. Brother Deacon Asa says, yep, Professor Kaplan is one of them GU lawyers the pig lickins are so proud of hiring, you know, until they're not. You know, you'll notice that they hired the Republicans this time through. By God, they hired somebody named Taylor, you know, somebody they can count on. Oh, and hey, this is great news. Thank you very kindly to Joan. Thank you, Joan. I hope you're listening live, because you just knocked down half of Thorn in the Side Thursday's fundraising. So now we're into Thursday and got it halfway knocked out. That's magnificent. Thank you, Joan. Thank you very kindly indeed. And Robert in Australia answering Ron's query. There's no Thanksgiving in Australia, for which we give thanks. It's bad enough with Halloween, and we get an asterisk for that. We don't celebrate Halloween in Australia, but the stores keep pushing it. And now we're getting this kind of nonsense. We're staying open later in the hope you'll spend more money while pretending it's all about giving. And why are the stores staying open longer? Because people aren't spending money. Household debt is at record highs. People are trying to pay it down by not spending more or putting it in the bank, which has totally confused the government, as the only idea they have for stimulating the economy is to get people to go further into debt. Speaking of the current Liberal government, Robert notes, it's bad enough with Halloween and Christmas decorations going up on October 1st. You know, that remains one of my bucket list things. My favorite Christmas carol is that intensely secular hymn written by Tim Minchin, an Australian, called White Wine in the Sun. It was last night when Lady B mentioned being a winter baby and having a bad attitude because never, not once, did she ever get to celebrate a birthday in warm weather. Lady B, what we need to do is go to Australia for Christmas and let's get the horn community together. Go to Australia for Christmas and winter birthdays and do it right. Because just that very concept of a Christmas where you're drinking white wine in the sun, well, Tim Minchin tapped into something with that. He really did. Oh, and I've got something here from Robert that bears running. Let me get it fired up here. Come on. We got to be able to do this. There, that ought to work nicely. The reason I'm taking time to do this is that Robert sends these to me from time to time. And they're always good. It's an honest government ad from Australia.
Hello, I'm from the Australian government. As you may have noticed, we're in the process of transitioning to authoritarianism.
Don't worry, you don't need to do anything. In fact, doing and saying nothing will greatly assist us in this process. For guidance, just look to the Labor Party.
Sadly, not everyone knows how to be a quiet Australian.
That's why, to ensure a smooth transition to authoritarianism, we're launching a new initiative. Introducing
the Quiet Australia Policy. Under the Quiet Australia Policy, Australia will be home only to quiet people, such as quiet whistleblowers. Because we're prosecuting all the loud ones who expose our shitfuckery, like how we abuse the tax system and defraud our neighbours, commit war crimes and spy on all of you.
We'll also have quiet journalists, because the ones who do their job by publishing those leaks will get their asses raided or thrown in jail to please our masters. Because journalists aren't above the law, except when they publish what we leak to them for our political interests, in which case they are
a quiet FOI agency, where if you lodge a request, you get
hello darkness my old friend.
Quiet charities, because if they dare to endorse a political party, we'll strip them of their tax deductible status.
And quiet corporations. just kidding. They can spend millions to buy politicians and we'll let them claim it as a tax deduction. Because we believe in the free market.
Unless you use that freedom to boycott companies with ties to coal mines and climate-denying lobby groups, in which case we'll make boycotts illegal.
How good are quiet shoppers and quiet shareholders?
We also love quiet protesters. Because nothing says free speech like some pepper spray in the fucking face.
Quiet school kids.
Because the little shits should be seen and not heard.
And now that everything's on fire thanks to our total paralysis on the climate crisis, we especially like quiet scientists, quiet conservationists, and quiet fire chiefs. Because fuck experts.
But hey, if you're a QAnon conspiracy nutjob, our PM will not only listen to your bullshit, he'll also put it in his speeches.
Cool and normal.
The quietest Australians are, of course, those we drove to suicide with our illegal debt recovery scheme.
The First Nations people murdered in our custody.
The elderly who die from negligence in our underfunded aged care homes.
And all the species about to go extinct under our watch. When you put all that together, you start to see the neoliberal shit show on a quietly dead-ass planet we're preparing for you and your kids.
Which is why, above all, the Quiet Australia policy relies on a quiet you.
Because the idea of loud fire chiefs,
conservationists,
scientists,
school kids,
protesters,
charities,
unions,
broadcasters,
whistleblowers,
journalists,
women,
First Nations people,
and you, all joining forces to say fuck authoritarianism scares the shit out of us.
And here at the Australian government, the last thing we want is a Prime Minister who loses his shit. Authorised by the Department of Quiet Supremacy.
That's brilliant. And thank you. Thank you, Robert, for sharing that. Robert signs off his email saying, Robert, cough, cough, from Oz. Thank you, Robert. Thank you very much indeed. Darlene in Connecticut noting, oh yeah, and Professor Pam Kaplan is not only fierce, but she's pissed off. She's pissed, as she later testified that she gave up her Thanksgiving holiday to read all the evidence and testimony, and even went so far as to eat a mail order turkey that instead of being able to roast one. She worked harder over the recent holiday than Doug Collins has ever worked in his entire useless life. And speaking of Turkey Buzzard Bar, I love that. Thank you, Darlene. See the next email. And here's the next email from Darlene in Connecticut. Washington Post, Barr suspected the Russia probe was a setup. He ordered a review. His prosecutor found nothing. The Justice Department watchdog concluded the FBI had an adequate basis to open the Russia investigation, in part based on assurances from U.S. Attorney John Durham. And that was the guy that Bill Barr, the prosecution, handpicked to go running around Europe trying to scare up some dirt. My hopes for it continue to fade. But somehow I still do harbor the aspiration that eventually, having done a number on the Constitution, that eventually Bill Barr will get the John Mitchell treatment. But it all reminds me of something that Reverbo said earlier today. Going back to what Reverbo had previously said about how everything could have been different but for the assassination of John Kennedy. Reverbo noted, 4:30 p.m., an AP five-minute news flash only mentions Republican response to impeachment proceedings. Why was this so hard to get almost 50 years ago? Control the media, and you control the message. I really think Brazil, you know, the film Brazil, rather than say Idiocracy, is the best comment on it at all. There were sages along the way who said, it doesn't have to go like this. But the masses were too easy to manipulate. We have become the Fire Sign Theater. You know, we're all bozos on this bus. It was all there. The rest of the world might return to darkness, but we could head into the light. We had it all there and ready to go, where everybody has enough and all are enjoying the perks of our creation. But some people were just too greedy. And instead, here we are. Just make sure y'all keep shopping. Reverbo says, I'm so disappointed, Bob. That's it. I'm done. Have a good show. And then a photograph of Boris Badenov, his arms stretched wide. Reverbo says, Boris, we missed you. There ain't enough LSD for this. No, but Reverbo is right. We are, and maybe going as far back as the mad lunatic ravings of Philip K. Dick. Philip K. Dick, of course, wrote what became Blade Runner. You know, Do Robots Dream of Electric Sheep? He wrote what became Minority Report. He wrote one entire novel called A Scanner Darkly that became an avant-garde-ish combination of live action and animation. And without fail, it can be fairly said that his vision of the future was not a hopeful one. And of course, his crowning achievement, I guess, now is The Man in the High Castle. And if I recall correctly, The Man in the High Castle was an unfinished work. You could say it wasn't even almost finished. That he kept puttering around on it all the way up until he died, Philip K. Dick. And I trust that we're far enough along from its premiere. It's in its fourth season now, and it's wrapping up this year, and I need to catch up with it. But the central premise is that out there is an America that is living through a dystopian nightmare in which the Allies lost the Second World War. And so what was once the United States of America has been divvied up by the Nazis in the East and the Japanese in the West. The Japanese control the West Coast and up to the, Rocky Mountain areas. And basically the Nazis have east of the Mississippi, and there's a sort of no man's land in between. But the evidence begins to appear that the people living in that nightmare world are living an alternate reality. And I wonder sometimes, I was thinking about this the other night, I wonder sometimes if Philip K. Dick used the Second World War rather than use something else, because maybe he was writing it at a time when it was still too fresh and too raw. Because there were those sorts of impacts coming out of 1963. For instance, John D. MacDonald writes the first Travis McGee novel, and it's published in 1964. And it, over the course of about 20 books, it becomes iconic. I've read the series a couple of times. Here in the waning years of the second decade of the 21st century, it's really anthropologically fascinating to read them and watch the times change. And watch the culture change. And watch a most gifted writer reflect it in the pages of fictional, you know, crime fiction. But 1963 stayed raw for a lot of people. And like I said, the first Travis McGee novel comes out in 1964. And John D. MacDonald had originally wanted to name Travis McGee Dallas McGee. But he changed it to Travis because of what had happened in Dallas in 1963. And so just to sort of weave these little threads together, it's hard not... Well, I wonder sometimes, based on what the physicists tell us about alternate universes and infinite universes and whatnot, if maybe there's a universe where that day doesn't happen, and where all the things that Reverbo was just talking about in his note come to pass instead of turning to ash in our mouths. I wonder. Yeah, okay, yeah, that technique, Ron and Raleigh, says, the Scanner Darkly film was done in rotoscoping. Yeah, that's the method. Ralph Bakshi pioneered it with, I think, Fritz the Cat, and then a movie called Wizards, and then the old animated Lord of the Rings that very few people have seen. Wow, that certainly was a digression to get us to the end of the first hour of the program. Darlene in Connecticut says, I would have been totally disappointed if U.S. Attorney John Durham from Connecticut found anything in support of Buzzard Barr's conspiracy theories. He did not. Barr is fucked up, and that's a frightening prospect when you consider the massive power he wields, as Todd from South Carolina continues to ring the alarm bells on, and which I've chimed in on with Todd, and which is evidenced by the DOJ's organizational chart. There's a chart that's a massive hierarchical layout wherein the buck stops with Barr, and it's pretty frightening. And it's an official government document. It's from justice.gov. And it lays out a world in which everything comes to Bill Barr. Attorney General, Deputy Attorney General, Solicitor, and underneath the Deputy Attorney General, the Solicitor General, the Associate Attorney General, the Office of Legislative Affairs, the Office of Legal Counsel, the Office of Public Affairs, the Office of Legal Policy, and the Office of Tribal Justice. The thing is, it was not put together, this organizational chart, by Bill Barr to prosecution. It has an autograph beneath it. Jefferson Davis Beauregard Sessions III, dated this here 5th day of February, year of our Lord, 2018. Apparently, melanoma had a hissy today. Carolee over at Crooks and Liars, who's a fine writer and an editor over there, took issue with a woman who said of today, because there was another moment when Professor Kaplan said, for instance, Donald, and she was talking about the no ennoblements, no awardings of titles. Language from the Constitution, and somebody named Barbara Cummings said, this was a serious hearing, no room for jokes, and especially no room to use a minor child as part of the joke. We cannot let ourselves become what we hate. And apparently Carolee wasn't having any of it. She said it wasn't offered as a joke, for fuck's sake. Do you know what she said, or are you just mad for the hell of it? And here's the quote. So while the president can name his son Baron, he can't make him a baron. As Carolee notes, it's a reasonable example and not a joke. But make no mistake, Professor Kaplan has gotten thoroughly under the skin of the maggots today. Oh, yeah. The Trump campaign has already attacked her over the Barron business. The maggot campaign saying, she just went out of her way to mock and attack Barron Trump. Democrats have disgraced themselves by giving a platform to this unhinged petty kook. Hey, well, listen to the audio. See if you think that she's mocking anybody.
So while the president can name his son Barron, he can't make him a baron. So while the president can name his son Barron, he can't make him a baron.
Now, granted, some of the room tittered. But it's a constitutional reality. The United States Constitution prevents titles of ennoblement because we set ourselves up hoping that we would not be cursed with that kind of bullshit. But intelligence and knowledge on that level is too much to expect from the maggots. And so now they're fundraising on Professor Kaplan's back. How is that not true? I mean, would it be any different if she had said, you can name your kid Earl, but you can't make him an Earl? But the reason that's so thoroughly got under their skin is because, remember, Nitwit Nero's fake name for himself, whenever he wanted to aggrandize himself, was what? John Barron? Yeah. It seems there's never any let up. This from Jack in Shreveport. This is fucking great on Kennedy. As you were talking about Senator John N. Kennedy of Louisiana, I either heard you say or the phrase popped into my head, country lawyer. Your accent brought to mind Foghorn Leghorn. There's a character in Futurama that works for that phrase, too. Anyway, I thought I'd Google for a Foghorn Leghorn clip where he's talking like a lawyer. Whoops, I was behind the curve. One of the items I pulled up was this. Who said it? John Kennedy or Foghorn Leghorn? In a nation this big, lots of people are bound to have the same ideas from time to time. Don't feel bad, Jack. And let's see. Jubilation Tea Cornpone comes from what? Little Abner, maybe? Can't recall right now. John Neely Kennedy is the junior U.S. Senator from Louisiana who was a key member of Governor Buddy Romer's staff before being elected to 5 terms as the state treasurer. That's before he turncoated. Foghorn J. Leghorn is an animated chicken who appeared as a featured character in Looney Tunes and Merry Melodies cartoons for Warner Brothers Pictures. Kennedy graduated magna cum laude in political science, philosophy, and economics from Vanderbilt, where he was president of his senior class and elected Phi Beta Kappa. He received his law degree from the University of Virginia. That's going to make Ron and Raleigh a little bit nauseated. And his Bachelor of Civil Law degree from Oxford University in England, no less, not the one in Mississippi, where he was a first-class honors graduate. They go on to say at NOLA.com that there's practically no way to get the two confused, unless you're just reading what they've said. You might look for, if you want to just have a giggle, go over to NOLA.com and look up the Who Said It, John Kennedy or Foghorn Leghorn quiz. But that's the thing. With regard to John Kennedy, John Neely Kennedy, it's an act. It's for the rubes. It's for the schmucks. And Kyle with a note or two. Oh, my God, this goes back a little ways when I was talking about Doug. Mouthful of moon pies, Collins. Oh, my God, Elmo on meth. I just shot beer out of my nose and mouth simultaneously. That's one of your best lines yet, IMO. Maggots. You fucking PC liberal sissies need a safe space from us using words. Ha, 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 ha. Also, maggots. You used words we don't like. Oh, my God, we're so offended. Boo, hoo, hoo. That's them. And Randy reminds us of another great. Senator Belfry comes from the Shoe comic strip. As in, that's in the. And, of course, for antecedents on a lot of this stuff, all you need is a collection of the newspaper strips of Pogo by Walt Kelly from the 50s and 60s. Let's do go back for a moment, though, please, to Professor Kaplan. She will be, once this is in the past and it just turns into a series of clips that they blow the dust off of periodically to show where it was that the country fell apart. Well, they'll probably run clips of Professor Kaplan sounding the alarm, and then some multimillionaire in front of the camera will say, "But we didn't listen."
And since then, countless other Americans have fought and died to protect our right to vote. But the framers of our Constitution realized that elections alone could not guarantee that the United States would remain a republic. One of the key reasons for including the impeachment power was a risk that unscrupulous officials might try to rig the election process. Now, you've already heard two people give William Davey his props. You know, Hamilton got a whole musical, and William Davey is just going to get this committee hearing. But he warned that unless the Constitution contained an impeachment provision, a president might spare no efforts or means whatsoever to get himself reelected. And George Mason insisted that a president who procured his appointment in the first instance through improper and corrupt acts should not escape punishment by repeating his guilt. And Mason was the person responsible for adding high crimes and misdemeanors to the list of impeachable offenses. So we know from that the list was designed to reach a president who acts to subvert an election, whether that election is the one that brought him into office or it's an upcoming election where he seeks an additional term. Moreover, the founding generation, like every generation of Americans since, was especially concerned to protect our government and our democratic process from outside interference. For example, John Adams, during the ratification, expressed concern with the very idea of having an elected president, writing to Thomas Jefferson that, "You are apprehensive of foreign interference, intrigue, influence. So am I. But as often as elections happen, the danger of foreign influence recurs." And in his farewell address, President Washington warned that history and experience prove that foreign influence is one of the most baneful foes of Republican government. And he explained that this was in part because foreign governments would try and foment disagreement among the American people and influence what we thought. The very idea that a president might seek the aid of a foreign government in his reelection campaign would have horrified them. But based on the evidentiary record, that is what President Trump has done. The list of impeachable offenses that the framers included in the Constitution shows that the essence of an impeachable offense is a president's decision to sacrifice the national interest for his own private ends. Treason, the first thing listed, lay in an individual's giving aid to a foreign enemy. That is, putting a foreign enemy's adversary's interests above the interests of the United States. Bribery occurred when an official solicited, received, or offered a personal favor or benefit to influence official action, risking that he would put his private welfare above the national interest. And high crimes and misdemeanors captured the other ways in which a high official might, as Justice Joseph Story explained, disregard public interests in the discharge of the duties of political office. Based on the evidence...
Now, I want to... There's just a couple more minutes of this clip left. But I want to point something out. In watching the coverage of this today, I heard repeatedly complaints that this was dry. That the American people would be bored to tears by it. I watched it. Now, maybe it's because I had the benefit, and I don't want to think that this is true. Maybe it's because I had the benefit of having a cup of coffee in law school. But I found it intensely compelling, deeply interesting. I like to think that I would have found it so, regardless of my level of education. Because I know for a fact that were my beloved mother and father still alive and had the mind with which to comprehend it, they would have been on the edge of their seats and they would not have left home. Would have waited for those occasional breaks that the panel itself took to run off to the bathroom or something, because they did not want to miss any of it, because they saw it as being the vital, life-saving business of the Republic. I can postulate this because they were the same way with the Watergate hearings. My dad had to go to work, but Mom was right there and briefed Dad on it when he would get home. And these are a pair of hillbillies who had nothing more than a high school education and a diploma from a West Virginia high school in 1943. And they were absolutely engaged in the idea that they had a say in government, in our republic. I suppose it's possible to teach history poorly and make it deadly dull and boring. One of the, and I'm not disturbing like, but yeah, I was before this, as the new school year was starting, toward the end of the summer, I got to talk to my granddaughter, our eldest grandchild. And I asked her what she liked, and she said she likes science and she likes math. I said, well, what don't you like? She said, I can't stand social studies. I can't stand the term social studies. I remember having social studies in school and wondering what the fuck it was. Oh, it's history? Cool. But she doesn't like history. All those dates, she said. All that stuff that you have to remember. And it occurs to me that as we have banged away at the idea that STEM is the be-all and end-all of education, it has come at a cost. And it has come at the expense of things like the study of who we are, why we are, and where we are, otherwise known as history. Going back to John Kennedy, John Tyler Kennedy, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, James in Illinois says, I'd love to poll his Oxford classmates to see if he acted like the bumpkin we have come to know, or if he managed to act like a civilized and erudite human being. Oh, I guarantee you he acted like a civilized and erudite human being. You can't bumpkin your way to being president of your senior class in Phi Beta Kappa at Vanderbilt University. And you don't bumpkin your way through law school at Mr. Jefferson's University there in Charlottesville. Damn it, Ron and Raleigh said. John Kennedy, Laura Ingram, can the Wahoos get no relief? We seem to get all the flotsam and jetsam. Sorry about that. We've all got things to be ashamed of, I suppose. I mean, look at Harvard. Look at Yale. Seems like there's as many ne'er-do-well scions of wealth that come out of there as any genius they ever produce. Randy in PA says, you don't get it, Bob. Most people don't have more than a 10-minute attention span if they have that much. Even I can't listen effectively to the Randy Rhodes Show because after 20 minutes of her intense content, my attention starts drifting. Does that mean my content's not intense? Well, but I'm glad I can convey it in such a way as to make it possible. And you know that shortened attention span has millennia old roots. Our brains changed evolutionarily in a big way with the rise of what? Literacy. Yes. With the rise of literacy, we didn't have to remember nearly as much. We could just jot it down, even if it required a wet clay tablet and a reed cut in the shape of a triangle to work out those cuneiform characters. You still didn't have to remember how many bushels of barley you owed to the headman so that he wouldn't send his thugs to come and kill your ass for holding out. And so our memory changed. Once upon a time, pre-literate societies, there were arguably lots of people who could recite the Iliad and the Odyssey. That diminished significantly after the Greeks learned to write and put it down on some form of paper, papyrus, what have you. And you can see this replicated in real time in remaining hunter-gatherer societies. They have profound memories. The navigators of Polynesia could stick their hand in the water in one of those great big outrigger canoes, stick their hand in the water, and comparing that to the skies, know where they were and where they were going and where and how they needed to navigate. They had no writing, and we're amazed by that. Our brains have changed, and our brains are continuing to change. They've changed with how we write. James Madison's sentences in the Federalist Papers are intensely complex with all kinds of dependent, independent clauses. And that was based on Cicero in Latin. And as you come forward in time, you get to, you know, Dickens writes the same way. You know, a lot of people argue that Dickens was paid by the letter. Dickens can take 40 pages to describe a fucking leaf. And in many instances, you know, no patience for it in the modern world. You see a lot of that reflected first with Mark Twain and then with Ernest Hemingway. Changes how we write. And now with the electronic revolution, how our brains work relative to communication is being rewired again. Makes you wonder where we're headed. Maybe back toward a communication, communications by a series of clicks and grunts, one never knows. Lee in New York, boring education. Can you make history boring? Easily. Have Ben Stein teach it. Ooh. Obligatory Star Trek reference, episode Pattern of Force. John Gill taught history as cause and effects, not names and dates. And then there's the modern move toward getting away from the great man theory of history. That history is a story of great men doing great things. When in fact, history is really the story of people whose names aren't even given. Using the precious finite days and hours and weeks and years of their lives to accomplish big things. I think about the people who built the Capitol in Washington, D.C. Do we know any of their names? We probably know the names of the people who thought they owned them. The roads of the Deep South that started out as trade network paths among the indigenous peoples who had developed them over the course of 10 or 15,000 years. We know not a single name. And we know not the names of the people who had their labor stolen from them to expand those paths into roadways. But we know the names of the great men who wanted it done. Down near where I live, where I grew up, there's something called Jackson Highway. In fact, a famous recording studio has its address on the front of the building, and it's four digits and the words Jackson Highway. Well, that's a shortened form. It stands for General Andrew Jackson's Military Highway. A highway that was created for purposes of Andrew Jackson's forces being able to get, among other things, down to the Battle of New Orleans. We remember Andrew Jackson. We do not remember the names of those who actually cut the trees, pulled the stumps, smoothed the dirt, dug the drainage ditches. But they're the ones who mattered. I saw some examples of this when I was in Philadelphia this past summer in the really commendable efforts that are being made there to make known the history of the enslaved peoples who made the early government go. Because if you're John Adams's and your Madison's and whatnots and your Washington's, if it had been left up to them, they'd have frozen to death or starved to death or died of thirst. Because they were very ill-equipped to do for themselves. Now, how in God's name is that dull or boring? But Randy in PA is right, because a whole lot of what this miserable misadministration and other Republican maladministrations have relied upon is the fact that the American people don't have time to do the due diligence required to take care of a republic based upon democratic principles of self-government. Wordsworth complained that we lay waste our days getting and spending. But Wordsworth came from fairly privileged circumstances in England. We're not talking about people who have wealth and are just amusing themselves to death. We're talking about people who have no choice, who have to be up with the sun and home after it's long since gone down, just to have food and shelter and transportation. And again, that's no accident either. That is by design. James in Illinois, subject line, brain changes. I've wondered, just based upon the use of smartphones, what toll that may have taken simply not having to have memorized all of those phone numbers, addresses, and methods of navigating by map or memory. Well, I know that in real time. I can still remember my childhood phone number because it was utterly necessary that I knew it. I can't tell you what my phone number was 5 cell phones ago. And as for other people's phone numbers, I'm completely at the mercy of the contacts list in my phone. And I suspect most of us are. And for fuck's sake, don't get me started on passwords. Let's finish up with Professor Kaplan.
Entry record before you. What has happened in the case today is something that I do not think we have ever seen before. A president who has doubled down on violating his oath to faithfully execute the laws and to protect and defend the Constitution. The evidence reveals a president who used the powers of his office.
I apologize. I've been calling her Kaplan. Her name is Professor Carlin. I so regret the error.
To demand that a foreign government participate in undermining a competing candidate for the presidency. As President John Kennedy declared, the right to vote in a free American election is the most powerful and precious right in the world. But our elections become less free when they are distorted by foreign interference. What happened in 2016 was bad enough. There is widespread agreement that Russian operatives intervened to manipulate our political process. But that distortion is magnified if a sitting president abuses the powers of his office actually to invite foreign intervention. To see why, imagine living in a part of Louisiana.
You think the reference to Louisiana was on purpose?
Or Texas, that's prone to devastating hurricanes and flooding. What would you think if you lived there?
It's kind of like what I was saying earlier about, was it possible that, like in The Man in the High Tower, using World War II was a stand-in for something he couldn't bear to write about, namely the assassination of Kennedy and how that changed us forever. She's talking about Louisiana and Texas and hurricanes, when in fact the hypothetical she's about to lay out actually happened in real time in Puerto Rico.
And your governor asked for a meeting with the president to discuss getting disaster aid that Congress has provided for. What would you think if that president said, I would like you to do us a favor. I'll meet with you, and I'll send the disaster relief once you brand my opponent a criminal. Wouldn't you know in your gut that such a president had abused his office, that he'd betrayed the national interest, and that he was trying to corrupt the electoral process? I believe that the evidentiary record shows wrongful acts on that scale here. It shows a president who delayed meeting a foreign leader and providing assistance that Congress and his own advisors agreed serves our national interest in promoting democracy and in limiting Russian aggression. Saying, Russia, if you're listening, you know, a president who cared about the Constitution would say, Russia, if you're listening, butt out of our elections. And it shows a president who did this to strong-arm a foreign leader into smearing one of the president's opponents in our ongoing election season. That's not politics as usual, at least not in the United States or not in any mature democracy. It is instead a cardinal reason why the Constitution contains an impeachment power. Put simply, a president should resist foreign interference in our elections, not demand it and not welcome it. If we are to keep faith with our Constitution and with our republic, President Trump must be held to account.
I'm ready to go to the jury room and vote. How about you? And see, while he was smarmy and said, well, of course, I know all of my colleagues up here, and I consider them friends, but... They live in an alternate universe. I'm right and they're wrong. I'm Jonathan Turley. I'm on TV a lot. I talk on Fox. Emery and Marvelline listen to me while they sit in their Barca loungers down in the trailer park that I wouldn't be caught dead in. Yeah. But Turley was not entirely useless. Because unlike the Republicans who stayed as far away from Professor Carlin as they could get because they didn't want any of what she had to offer. Democrats did engage with Jonathan Turley because they weren't afraid of him. This exchange between Colorado's Joe Neguse and Turley was instructive because Turley, having been brought there to try to exonerate Nitwit Nero, wound up helping to bust him.
Professor Turley, you've studied the impeachments of President Johnson, President Nixon, President Clinton. Am I right that President Nixon allowed senior White House officials, including the White House counsel and the White House chief of staff, to testify in the House impeachment inquiry?
Yes.
And you're aware that President Trump has refused to allow his chief of staff or White House counsel to testify in this inquiry, correct?
Yes, but various officials did testify, and they are remaining in federal employment.
And that does not include the White House counsel nor the White House chief of staff, correct?
That's correct.
And am I right that President Clinton provided written responses to 81 interrogatories from the House Judiciary Committee during that impeachment inquiry?
I believe that's
sounds about right. And you're aware that President Trump has refused any requests for information submitted by the Intelligence Committee in this impeachment inquiry?
I have, yes.
Are you familiar with the letter issued by White House counsel Pat Cipollone on October 8th, written on behalf of President Trump, and in effect instructing executive branch officials not to testify in this impeachment inquiry?
Yes, I am.
And am I correct that no president in the history of the Republic before President Trump has ever issued a general order instructing executive branch officials not to testify in an impeachment inquiry?
That's where I'm not sure I can answer that affirmatively. I mean, President Nixon, in fact, went to court over access to information, documents, and the like, and he lost.
Well, Professor Turley, I would just, again, refer you back to the history that's been recounted by each of the distinguished scholars here today, because we know, as we recount these examples, that President Nixon did in fact allow his chief of staff and his chief counsel to testify, and this president has not. We know that President Clinton responded to interrogatories propounded by that impeachment inquiry,
that.
And that this president has not. At the end of the day, this Congress and this committee has an obligation to ensure that the law is enforced. And with that...
Oops. Meanwhile, some right-wing outfit, Jim lets me know, has sent out a blast email saying, Democrat witness goes off script, shocks impeachment hearings with historic speech. They accuse him of being a Democrat, Turley. And yet, all he said was, I didn't vote for Trump. He's a never Trump Republican. I mean, it's kind of hard to say that you're a Democrat when you said that Clinton could be impeached, but this monstrosity cannot. And Turley's testimony was in fact a litany of self-contradictions. Among other things, he said that an impeachable offense has to be a crime. That runs entirely against the great body of constitutional law. And not just that, it runs against what... I don't know. Maybe alternate universe Jonathan Turley is friends with alternate universe Lindsey Graham. Because back in 2014, before they were maggots, back when they were just teabaggers, birthers, deathers, ninthers, denthers, deathers, tenthers, and birchers and booger eaters, they were hooting and hollering about impeaching Barack Obama for being a Negro in the White House. Well, not quite, but close. But when they were blathering on about impeaching Obama, Jonathan Turley wrote in 2014, while there's a high bar for what constitutes grounds for impeachment, an offense does not have to be indictable. Serious misconduct or a violation of public trust is enough. Madison saw impeachment as defending the community against the incapacity, negligence, or perfidy of the chief magistrate. And the founders emphasized that impeachments were about what happened in the political arena, involving political crimes and misdemeanors resulting in political punishments. He asserted that there were limits on what Congress could impeach a president for. It couldn't just be on a whim, but that it could also involve abuses of power or derelictions of duty that weren't federal crimes per se. But today, he was a completely different Jonathan Turley. And it was also a day of if you have the facts, pound on the facts, if you have the law, pound on the law. And if you have none, if you have neither, for God's sakes, pound on the table. That was the tack taken by Jim Shorts Jordan. And it, I guess it was entertaining. Pissing and moaning about the discomfort of a chair or the HVAC. Right. And it I don't know how well it worked. We'll have to watch and see how the polling data comes out. So, you know, as the saying goes, watch this space, or listen to this podcast, or this live broadcast. And meanwhile, we haven't touched on Nitwit Nero's big European vacation. That was ugly. I woke up this morning thinking I was having why do you call him Shorts Jordan? Jim wants to know. Jim, I don't call him Shorts Jordan. I call him Jim Shorts Jordan. You know what gym shorts are. Elastic waistband back in the 70s and early 80s. They were kind of short. Yeah. Easy to pull down. I call him Jim Shorts Jordan, Jim, because he is deeply implicated in looking the other way back when a doctor named Richard Strauss was running, among other things, a rape emporium for himself and using the athletes of The Ohio State University as his personal sex toys. Jim Shorts Jordan has been implicated by no less than three individuals who say that, yes, he was made aware of the sexual abuse and sexual assault perpetrated by Dr. Richard Strauss and did nothing about it. Most particularly and most recently, the wrestling referee, because Jim Shorts Jordan was an assistant wrestling coach at The Ohio State University, and was made aware by a wrestling referee that Dr. Richard Strauss, the team doctor, had, well, made sexual contact of an insulting or provoking nature with the said referee, and Jim Shorts Jordan's response was, well, that's Richard. I mean, this is on a par with what happened at Penn State. But anyway, things went very badly, very quickly for Nitwit Nero in Europe. He found out early on that he was the butt of everybody's jokes. And then, I don't know. Everything has a seventh grade reference with this pathetic attempt at a president. Everything is petty. Everything is venal. And so there was a so-called hot mic moment in which Justin Trudeau and Emmanuel Macron and even Boris the Spider Johnson were gaggling together in a cocktail party kind of situation. And they did not mention him by name, but they were making jokes about him, laughing at him. And in fairly short order, lo and behold, Nitwit Nero canceled the rest of his trip, got on the plane and fled for home, having been, as others have said, laughed off the continent. George Conway, you know him, said, I can't remember the last time anyone, let alone a president of the United States, was laughed off a continent. But he was. Because everybody knows he's corrupt and everybody knows he's dumber in the head than a hog is in the ass. And the only reason that his remaining friends are punks and thugs like Erdogan and Duterte and Jair Bolsonaro and Kim Jong-un bad golf pants is because they don't give a fuck about him, but they know how to get their way with him by stroking his ego. And so he fled. Because that's what cowards do. But in a way, it validates something that I have said in the past. If you really, really want to take him down, the only way to do it is to have someone with the moral authority and the wit to look him straight in the eye and tell him what an awful human being he is, what a laughable human being he is, what an idiot he is, how the best part of him ran down his mama's leg. And it will destroy him. As Brother Deacon Asa points out, Trump basically spent the whole weekend sobbing to himself about himself while on a diplomatic trip. What I'm saying is it was a whole lot of diplomatsturbation. Oh, my. Did you have to work on that one for very long, brother? That was quality, diplomatsturbation. Going back to Jim Shorts Jordan, Darlene in Connecticut says, right, and be sure to tell Jim that Dr. Strauss committed suicide, so he was never prosecuted for his crimes. Which the Ohio State University sort of now acknowledges, but has gone out of its way to only acknowledge its own knowledge in the post-Jim Shorts Jordan era, thereby trying to cover and protect him. Dear God, the metal image of him in one of those wrestling leotards. Oh, and as to Turley, Steve sends a link along, subject line, not quite a Democrat. ABA Journal, libertarian presidential candidate, names two law profs as potential SCOTUS nominees. Guess who one of them was? And then, of course, there was an op-ed, Obama devastating for civil liberties. Yeah, that piece that Jim sent along is instructive because facts don't matter over in maggot world. Remember they slimed Lieutenant Colonel Vindman as a never-Trumper? Anybody who doesn't bend over and offer to lip lock on Nitwit Nero's hairy toe is a never-Trumper. In many ways, you can argue that the maggots are monarchists. They're sick of being a free people. They want to be ruled. They yearn for someone to wear a crown, and that's actually got a through line in American history. People love to quote Alexander Hamilton. Well, Alexander Hamilton got himself in a heap of shit early on by suggesting that instead of having a president and instead of being a free people, that we should have a monarch, a king. Instead of governing ourselves, we should be citizens of some person deemed royal. Makes me nauseated just to think about it. And it manifests to this day in the fawning interest that the American people have in that welfare family over in England, which it turns out has not exactly been a breeding ground for decency. Back when Hitler was rising to power, the British royal family had a bit of a blue blood crush on Mr. Hitler. And of course, there are the sons of Chuck and Di, who had a predilection for showing up at costume parties in Nazi face. And now we find out about Prince Andrew, who can't remember why he was photographed at Jeffrey Epstein's with his arm around an underage girl. Yeah. You're right. Flavio up in Wisconsin says, Pamela Carlin killed it. Yeah, Nadler only said privately he wouldn't take any shit. Dr. Carlin did not take any shit. And she made damn sure that the Republicans didn't want anything to do with her. But hey, I got to give bonus points to Alabama's Martha Roby, who isn't running for re-election, by the way, for treating the hearing like a cosplay convention, and arriving in her best Scout Finch haircut. Jesus, what a bunch of embarrassments! And like I said, we haven't heard from you in a while. Let's run over and check in with Scott. Hey, Scott.
Son, I say, son, somebody's on the phone. Anyway, how are you?
Sorry you had to wait so long, but I had a lot of ground to cover.
Oh, you did, and you did it quite well. It's always an inspiration, because while you're talking, I'm jotting down notes of things that you trigger little synapses or something in my head, and I think about stuff I hadn't thought about in a while. So where shall I begin?
You pick.
Okay. You were early on in the program, you were talking about the pall that hung over America for weeks and months after John Kennedy was killed. And I remember it, but I didn't have a really good sense of it until later after I'd grown up. I mean, I remember the whole deal, and I remember the pall. And I remember people like walking around like in a trance or a daze or something for quite a long time afterwards. And, you know, it was the week before Thanksgiving, you know, which is a month before Christmas. And it was just nothing was quite right for a long, long time. And you know what helped to snap the country out of it? You'll probably never guess.
A football game?
No. No. February 1964.
The Beatles.
The Beatles on Ed Sullivan. And that kind of snapped us back into the here and now.
Yeah, I was actually standing outside the theater, the Ed Sullivan Theater, on the 50th anniversary of that performance.
Oh, wow.
Somewhere there's a photograph.
Wow.
I made my national TV debut in New York on the same date as the Beatles did.
Well, there you go. There you go. The other thing that a lot of people don't know, or they misrecall, a lot of people think that the first television appearance in America by the Beatles was on the Ed Sullivan Show, but they weren't. They appeared twice on American television. Now, it was their first live appearance on U.S. television, but they had appeared twice before. One was on the Jack Parr program, not the Tonight Show, because by that time he had left the Tonight Show. Carson had taken over, and he had a weekly Friday night show on NBC. But apparently someone had sent him newsreel footage from England, and he made fun of them. He thought they were the weirdest thing he'd ever seen. And they were also seen briefly, I believe, on the morning of November 22nd, 1963, on the CBS Morning News. So there you go. You just knocked these synapses around inside of my head, Bob, and I think of the most obscure stuff. You were talking about Foghorn Leghorn, and I sent you a clip from the old Fred Allen radio program from the 40s. He had a senator, or a character on the show, Senator Beauregard Cleghorn, played by a radio actor.
He was the inspiration, the progenitor for Foghorn Leghorn.
For people who weren't around when Kennedy was killed, there's an episode of Mad Men that gives as good of a representation of what it was like for a more or less typical middle-class American family during that time. And I can't think of the name of it. I believe it was in season 3. And if you Google JFK and Mad Men, it should come up, whatever the episode is. It's in season 3. I do remember that. But it's on Netflix if you want to check it out. And speaking of stuff to watch, see, now that I got my C-SPAN back, along with my Turner Classic Movies, I'm just, you can't pull me away from
TV. You're a much happier human being now. Yes.
Oh, yeah. Well-informed and vastly more entertained than I have a right to be. The other night on C-SPAN, I recorded them because I didn't have time to watch them right away. There were two interviews from two people whose names we all know today, who back in 1974 were both staff lawyers for the House Judiciary Committee in 1974 during the Watergate impeachment proceedings. And one of the interviews was a young, well, she's not young now, but at the time she was a young woman named Hillary Rodham. She was one of the staff lawyers. And the other was a man who's running against Donald Trump for the Republican nomination, former governor of Massachusetts, William Weld,
yeah.
But anyway, if you Google C-SPAN oral history, and either William Weld or Hillary Clinton, you'll see both of their interviews for the Nixon library, the oral histories that they did, because they were tied in to Nixon.
Whose staff was Hillary Clinton on?
Well, they were both on the impeachment, the office for the impeachment. As a matter of fact,
were they on the minority or majority side?
Oh, they were on the majority, the Democrats.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Weld was, even though he's a Republican now. Or no, he may have been on the Republican. But you talk about a modern-day personage who knows a little something about the nature of impeachment and why it is sometimes necessary. Watch that interview with Weld.
I know that the only reason I asked is I know that Hillary Clinton had transitioned from being a Goldwater girl to a Democrat by the time that I believe by the time that McGovern was the Democratic nominee in 1972.
Yeah, because Bill was the ambassador to youth for the McGovern campaign in 72, if I'm recalling the story correctly. Actually, she mentioned the name of the House member. I don't know whether it was Rodino or one of the other Democratic House members. One of the staff lawyers contacted her when they were putting the staff together, actually called Bill Clinton down in Arkansas and wanted him to be one of the staff lawyers. There's your irony. Just think, if he had been on the impeachment law,
no, Hillary's a much better lawyer than I am. You need to get hold of her.
Well, she was visiting him. This was before they got married. She was down in
I know.
Yeah, okay. So anyway.
But he recommended her, didn't he?
Right, he did. He was going to be running for the Congress in Arkansas, which he lost that race. But the guy on the other end of the phone said, well, can you recommend anybody? He said, well, Hillary's right here, and handed her the phone. So, but anyway, when you get a chance, do watch that William Weld interview, and hers is pretty good too. I'd watch both of them.
If I could digress back to today just for a moment,
we can
wander around through the flows and eddies of time and history at will here.
Yeah,
one of the things that got me today, because of how my mind works. Every time the Republicans are not hard to discern in terms of their messaging. Early on in the process, for instance, some goober said, I move that we subpoena the person commonly referred to as the whistleblower.
Yeah.
And before he could even get the R in whistleblower out, Nadler said, is there a motion to table? And somebody hollered, got one! All in favor, aye. All opposed, nay. And then motion to reconsider or some such. And then they had a roll call vote because the Republicans want names on issues.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, the Democrats, the Republicans couldn't even be bothered to be there. Their names were called and they didn't answer. But every Democrat called answered with an aye, aye,
yeah.
Aye. It was deadly serious. Meanwhile, Doug Collins is up there shucking and jiving about how cold the chair is.
Yeah.
So that was one thing I noticed. But the other one, Scott, was that they're just not very good at this.
Oh, no.
Because I'm so old I can remember the Mueller, the Mueller investigation. And I can remember when Republicans were hollering, oh, Jesus, this is taking too long. Oh, he's been doing this for too long. We're getting old waiting on his report. Why can't he? Oh, why? Where's the report? God dang it, where's the report? This has been going on forever. Oh, this is taking longer than Watergate tookin'. It didn't, of course, but nonetheless, they hollered that. And so, today, it was the exact opposite. Oh, dang. This here's a going way too fast. All the Democrats they done decided what they're going to do, and they're going to do it, and they're in a hurry. And I thought, you fuckers, where was the this is going way too fast back when it was the Mueller investigation?
Yeah.
And then I thought, you know, you could always call their goddamn bluff. Because the House Intelligence Committee under Adam Schiff, and that was another thing today, why ain't Adam Schiff a testifying? Yeah, Jesus, I don't know. Why didn't Newt Gingrich testify during the, right?
Yeah.
Why didn't Lindsey Graham testify? Of course, the thing is, they pontificated back then, and for all intents and purposes, it was testimony. For instance, Lawyer Taylor, the minority counsel today, among other things, in questioning Turley, brought him some charts and graphs that showed that the only people that the people on that there committee who was Democrats, well, they don't represent nothing but commies. They come. They come from some of the most left wing parts of the country. Oh, goddamn! Shut the. You know, and you know, nobody was going to interrupt him, but it would have been entirely appropriate for the chair to say, "Does minority counsel wish to be sworn and testify?"
Well, which was the staff lawyer who snapped at one of the women, and came back with an angry? That was a yes or no question. Did you see that today?
I know that was done to Turley by a Democrat, and that was retaliation.
Oh, maybe it was Turley, but I thought it was a woman that one of them was talking to, because I was puttering around listening.
Well, there was only one woman on the panel, and that was Professor Carlin. And I figured out why I was referring to her as Kaplan. I apologize for it again.
Yeah.
But once upon a time, when you were getting ready to take the bar exam, or maybe getting ready to take the LSAT, there was a company. Oh,
there was a
company that would help you study for it and have a greater chance of success at getting in or passing the bar, called Kaplan. And I think that's what my mind did. But anyway, it's going too fast. Damn, this is fast. Well, you know, we could always call their bluff. And to a certain extent, Adam Schiff is, because he's not done investigating. And one of the true things that Jonathan Turley said was that in the Nixon impeachment, and I felt kind of proud of myself, frankly, because I argued this fucking months ago, and some people told me I was nuts. But Turley pointed out that the real damning evidence against Nixon came when there were orders that had become final because they had gone all the way through the legal process and there was no further recourse. Which is exactly what I was arguing months ago, you might recall.
No, this was over the release of the smoking gun tape, I think is what...
Well, the tape was part of it, yeah. The Supreme Court case on the tapes.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I argued months ago is, look, if you want the really damning stuff that can get a president removed from office or force him to leave, you have to have finality of adjudication on the things that constitute impeachable offenses. So, for instance, if the Supreme Court rules, or if to one degree or another, maybe they refuse to take the appeal, but if those orders go final on these cases in which Trump has perpetrated impeachable offenses, such as those described by precious Lindsey Graham, who said back in the 90s, when the president decides that he will not honor a subpoena from the Congress, well, then he takes away the Congress's power. And he becomes impeachable right there at that very little old moment.
Well, it's the old GOP double standard.
IOKIYAR is what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And see, people today and even 20 years ago don't have a good representation of how those things should be conducted. Neither the Clinton impeachment proceedings nor where we are in the Trump impeachment proceedings. You've got to go back, and they're all online now, on video, the actual video, AmericanArchive.org, and look for Watergate. And as seen on PBS in 73 and 74, the gavel-to-gavel Watergate, Senate Watergate proceedings, and gavel-to-gavel the House Judiciary proceedings. And you'll see the distinction, the difference between how it's been handled now and 20 years ago and how it was handled when you had responsible people on both sides of the aisle. And there, even back in 74, there were, and in 73 for the Senate proceedings, there were still some Republicans, more so in the House, who were the diehards, you know, who just not until they were presented with the smoking gun in their hand with smoke coming out of it, that tape, not until then, and they even did so grudgingly, did they finally come around to the reality of the situation. There was a New Jersey House member and also a California House member back in 74, who they were almost brought to tears at having to do the right thing. That's how resistant they were.
Yeah.
And now it's all shucking and jiving. They're showboating for Fox News and Onan, Spill It on the Ground News, and for Trump.
The network that spills its news upon the ground, yes.
They're playing to an audience of one when it comes right down to it.
Well, okay, so that leads to another question. Do you think Chlamydia Claudius fled Europe today because he had been laughed off the continent or because he was shitting himself to get back because he knows how deep he's in it?
Well, it's funny that you should bring that up because he was probably better off in Europe.
Or is he melting? You know? Wait. I think there's a third possibility here, Scott. Sorry to cut you off.
That's all right.
Is he melting down so badly that they've got to get him back here because they have no way of dealing with him over there in terms of medical facilities?
That could be part of it too, yes. He might have been better off to stay in Europe because things are way worse over on this side of the Atlantic. He's getting it from all sides is what it amounts to. And remember what I've said all along, even before the election in 2016, which seems like four fucking ever ago, Bob. I said that this guy is like a rat cornered at the dead end of an alley, that in that position will rear up on its hind legs and snarl and screech and try to kill whoever's after him. And that's coming to pass. And I know that you saw it coming, and I know that I saw it coming, because getting back to history, it's all about patterns when it comes right down to it. That's why history teachers do such a shitty job in the teaching of history, which was one of my favorite subjects way back when. If you put it down to dusty old facts and figures and dates, it's got no oomph to it. You've got to present the material in a way that it becomes relevant in today's world, and even looking ahead to the future, because really, I think in literature I read somewhere in fiction, there's only like seven plot points throughout the history of recorded literature, and they keep getting recycled. It's all about patterns. It's all about scenarios. And you're not going to change human nature. The people around in the days of Egypt still behaved as human beings. They were wired the same way, I mean, when it comes right down to it. And that's why history is such a blah subject for a lot of kids, because there's no life to it. It's not presented in a way that makes you wonder and makes you see the patterns and you know, that like there's nothing new under the sun.
And forgive me if I say that I wonder if that's by design. There was some reference by one of the witnesses today, or maybe by one of the congresspeople, to if we all recall our civics.
Yes.
I think it was one of the witnesses.
Yeah.
And my pink little ears perked up, and I went, forgive me, your ivory towerness, but we don't all have civics to remember.
Right.
I mean, there's
it's like art and music in the schools. Those programs have gone by the boards, unless you go to a special school, an advanced school of some sort.
It's like saying if we all remember our elementary school library, well, you know, those have gone the way of the dodo. And yeah, I'm not sure that not, some every, of not everybody deliberate. Remembers what it was like to have a library in their elementary school.
Yeah.
My kids didn't have one.
Even news coverage is not how it was 40 and 50 years ago.
Jesus, we got My Weekly Reader when I was in elementary school.
Yes. Yes.
And it was you know, considerably simplified, but it still gave pertinent and what it did back at that grade level was to create an ongoing interest.
Yes.
In what the world was. And that was a good thing.
Well, when I think about it, and I do think of getting to be my age, I do think about this from time to time. I know, as chaotic as the 60s were, growing up in that decade was probably the greatest gift I ever received. Because I'm old enough, I came along at a time where now, looking back on it, I can appreciate the then and now. I can look at the way of the world today and look at how things were in my Wonder Bread years in terms of news, in terms of appreciation of things, in even situation comedies and game shows of the 60s. They were based on the premise that the people watching it knew something. I remember when Art Fleming premiered as the host of Jeopardy in the early 60s. If you think Jeopardy is tough today, dig up a couple of old vintage Jeopardies from the first years that it was on. You had to know shit to get on Jeopardy back then.
Oh, I know. They had answers like, what is a Hupmobile?
Yeah, yeah. And you're right. There could be some no small part of deliberateness in the dumbing down of society at large. Because, by God, we can't have people know shit. That's what makes this show so good. You bring stuff to it that many of us have not even heard of before, or if we have heard about it, we'd forgotten that we knew it.
Well, I'll say this much, Scott. It is far easier to rule people than govern them, and the best way to get to the point where you can rule them is to keep them from knowing how governance works.
Yeah.
And the thing I think that bugs me the most is, one, you've got that completely disconnected segment of the population, but as I see on any given day via social media, And you know, I'm not one of these assholes who goes, no, you're wrong about that little piece of minutia there. But sometimes I jump in and say, you know, it's not that way. You know, I'm not being mean, but I just want you to know. Even the people who are politically plugged in don't fully understand. I mean, it has taken the better, and I'm not talking about the Horn Family Community Congregation here, because we are, for the most part, we are far more engaged than most.
Well, and that was, I don't mean to interrupt, but that was one of the other things I was going to compliment the Horn family on. The fact that not only do you weave a program each night that is par excellence in terms of information, but I learn a lot from the people who send the emails and call in.
Sure. So do I.
I mean, that's how we're wired. That's how we're geared.
And what I was getting at a moment ago is that part of the reason for this hearing today was almost exclusively educational. These professors were brought in specifically to explain what impeachment is and to do it in such a way that it can be carved up into 20-second sound bites. So that those people that Randy and PA was alluding to a while back can get their minds around it.
Yeah.
Because look where we are. I would say if you did a statistically valid national poll, most people would think that impeachment means remove the president from office.
I'm sure a good number of people do think that.
When that does, you know. And we went over it at great pains here in a couple of Friday on the Front Porches and a couple of regular programs, too. Impeachment is something, and that's why they said over and over and over again today, impeachment is exclusively the province of the House. And the House determines what is impeachable conduct. And that's part of what made Jonathan Turley so utterly disingenuous. He kept saying that the Democrats were oh, it's going too fast, and it's too. He said the impeachment of Andrew Johnson was too fast, and the impeachment of Bill Clinton was too narrow, and that's why they both failed. And he said, well, you know, the Democrats have to move slower, and they've got to develop the evidence. And that's what part of the, that's one of the times when he got into the business of judicial finality, which I do understand, and which I have argued myself, like I said earlier, is what will really start countersinking nails into his coffin. Okay. But the disingenuity of his argument was the fact, they've just got to have more evidence from the White House of the president's conduct. Well, the fact of the matter is, they would have that evidence had the White House not issued that entirely sui generis order for no one, absolutely no one, to cooperate. That order itself is an impeachable act because it usurps the constitutional authority of the Congress. So for Jonathan Turley to say, as in essence, this is what he said, as long as the president stonewalls and prevents the Congress from having access to information to which they are constitutionally entitled, you can't impeach him. So what that means for the future is that any other bad president just has to, you know, raise a middle finger to Congress and they can't be impeached. Because the Congress can't get the evidence.
Even as bad as Nixon was, okay? And he was pretty bad. I mean, he actually did have a few things to recommend him. I mean, the EPA comes to mind. The fact that he wanted to, didn't he flirt with the idea of a basic income for people? And some other stuff besides. But that doesn't overshadow the bad Richard. There was good Richard and there was bad Richard, okay? But even during Watergate, even Nixon didn't try something like that. But yes, he did stonewall with the tapes. But offhand, I can't think of a witness, at least in the Senate Watergate hearings, that was barred from going. Because even Alexander Butterfield, God bless him, he's still upright and above ground. He's 80-some years old, but even Alexander Butterfield, who supervised the installation and the overseeing of the taping system, okay, even he admitted that when it came time, he was going to, if they compelled him to be there, he would be there, and if they asked him a direct question, he wouldn't weasel word his way out of it. And this is how far we've fallen in terms of supposed public servants in this country.
Well, yeah, I just got a note from Darlene in Connecticut saying exactly same thing I thought and kept saying to my assistant in the office. Republicans were complaining about how long the Mueller investigation was taking, that it was moving too slow when it was moving at lightning speed. Today, the impeachment process is going too fast. That was the thrust of Turley's argument. I called bullshit on that, too. You wonder where Baby Bear's impeachment is. You know, the one that's just right.
And she
continues, and the Dems were ready for the Republicans' various motions to stonewall, as Democratic Zoe Lofgren was right there with her motions to table countless times for seconding by Nadler countless times. That was planned. Even the clerk was whipping through the roll call votes as the Republicans were engaging in useless exercise upon useless exercise. And, of course, that will now engender a cry that, well, they just steamrollered us.
Well, of course. I mean,
And Jim and Jim Shorts Jordan pissing and moaning about how, about the process. Why will no one? I mean, you know, book him at MSNBC or CBS or ABC, and then look at him and say, Are you being deliberately dishonest with the country and your constituents, or do you just not know that these committees are operating under rules that were promulgated by the Republican majority when they had the House? What's the answer, Jim Shorts?
Yeah. And this is the thing about Trump. He's pulled a page from the Nixon playbook, and if we should know anything by now, that shit doesn't work. It might work for a little while. You may forestall the inevitable for some amount of time. But see, I wonder what...
Wait, are you about to go all A. Lincoln and say you can fool some of the people all of the time and all of the people some of the time, but you can't fool all the people all the time?
No, I wasn't going to do that, but that does fit the conversation. What I wonder is, in terms of whether we're going too fast or going too slow, how does this play into Mitch McConnell's game? Because he's got a lot at stake on the line. What sort of game is he playing? What is his long game?
Well, the Republicans can't decide whether they want it now or whether they want it later. Because on the one hand, if they can get it early and get it out of the way, then they can campaign on it for the entire 2020 season. On the other hand, the longer it goes on, And the theory behind that is the longer it goes on, the more likely it is that that the Democrats are finally going to find, if they haven't already, the smoking gun.
Yeah.
And that's why I said, you know, it would be fine if Nadler and Schiff called their bluff and said, okay, that's fine. We'll consider some articles of impeachment, but we'll keep considering and investigating on other ones.
Yeah.
And we may have more. There may be two trials in the Senate. There may be five. Who fucking knows?
Well, and see that thing
because there's
that
no limit. And one of the things. I'm sorry. I'm just so. I just got filled up on this crap all day long, and I got to get it out of me.
Me too.
Plus,
I was drinking caffeinated coffee, which didn't help. It's
Jesus help me! Yeah, God help me if I'd had caffeine today.
Long enough to talk to you.
But I heard one of those jackasses say, while we're sitting here impeaching this good and decent, honest Christian man. And he didn't. He wasn't that over the top. A lightning bolt would have come down and taken him out if he had. We're not doing the people's business.
Oh, yeah. A couple of them did that.
And the one that crawled all over me.
Taking care of the infrastructure. We could be taking care of medicine costs for all.
Well, the one that got all over me, I guess because of where I live, was when he said, I mean, this here committee itself could be dealing with the opioid crisis.
Yeah.
You fuck. You don't give a good goddamn about the opioid crisis. No.
Well, and that thing that Turley was trying to do with, well, you know, you can't just have one article of impeachment. Well, who says that they're going to, like you say, who says they're going to have one? You know, you go where the
fuck
evidence
takes you. I mean, at this point in time, if it's going too fast, well, let's go nice and slow, and then let's have a trial on three or four counts, and let's keep investigating. Let's have another trial. Let's make sure that chinless Mitch McConnell does nothing but try impeachments. I mean, it's not like he's got the Senate over there doing anything. At least they'd have to show up for that. Jesus, I hate that bunch.
You know how long it should go, Bob, these proceedings and others like them? These proceedings should go just as long as the Benghazi proceedings went. I don't want to hear the end of impeaching Trump until it's reached the amount of time that was pissed away. You remember how many fucking hearings there were?
Oh, Christ, yeah.
For Benghazi.
Oh yeah, and while we're at it, you know, if it goes to a Senate trial and they start hollering about, we want Adam Schiff to testify. Well, Adam Schiff is not afraid of a bunch of piss ant, peanut shell eating Confederate senators.
Yeah.
He should say, fine. You know what? I don't have a fucking call log full of conspiring with Lev and Igor and Rudy. I'll bring Dev with me. Maybe he can sue y'all or something. Did you see that Dev is now suing CNN?
I can't keep it all straight. I heard that one of them was suing...
For $1 billion. No, not really, but like hundreds of millions of dollars, because they did a story about the fact that Lev of the Lev and Igor show says, yeah. Oh, yeah, I had lots of meetings with Devin Nunes. I mean, we came up, we planned a lot of shit.
Well, wait
and
a minute.
CNN just reported it, and now he's suing him for it.
Now, wait a minute. I'm getting confused here. I thought that Nunes has got a bunch of lawsuits and just sprung a new one. Are you talking about Rudy's guy, Dev, or are you talking about...
Yeah, Lev. Lev and Igor.
Lev, I mean.
Lev and, or, as my buddy Bo put it this morning, Lev and Igor.
But didn't Congressman Nunes, hasn't he just sprung a suit himself, a new one? He was going on about cows or something.
Yeah, he just filed a brand new lawsuit against CNN.
Okay, well, there you, okay, I misheard what you, there are so many fucking players to keep track of, you know.
Oh, and what's this? Like, I got something that looks like breaking news from Kyle in Kentucky, Stan. I stepped away for a bit and came across this on Twitter. Active shooter locks down Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard. Fucking gun control. Fucking now. Yes, I know the fundamentalist, amosexual, evangelicals will never let that happen, but is enough enough yet? I'm so sick
Pearl
of this
Harbor?
Shit. Every fucking day, mass shooting, active shooter. They don't have this problem in other countries because they don't let the masses arm themselves for the celebration of the second coming of the sky spook. Okay, that's enough for one rant, but I'm so sick of this. Shaking my fucking head.
Pearl Harbor, Hawaii, you mean?
Pearl Harbor Naval Shipyard. I think that's the only one we've got.
Jesus.
Oh,
well,
and
last week,
and by the way, going back to why did Nitwit Nero flee Europe? Lee in New York, why Trump ran away? It's simple. NATO is united against Trump, not America, just Trump. He has no friends. Even his brother from another mother, Boris Johnson, born in the U.S., is more welcome than the bloviating bulbous boor. The thing he can't stand is lack of adoration. Next obligatory Star Trek reference, Day of the Dove. The alien fed on hostility. Joy makes it weak and leave.
Oh, and speaking of Star Trek, D.C. Fontana passed on.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah, God. She was a pioneer, I mean, in terms of women writers for that type of genre. Science fiction, back in those days, in the early mid-60s, that was not a real common thing, as I understand it. Man, we got all over the place. Did you get that little note that I sent you about rotoscoping?
Yes.
See, this is the thing about knowing stuff. The minute you mentioned rotoscope, I thought back to my childhood sitting cross-legged in front of the black and white TV watching Max Fleischer cartoons, which were old in the 60s when I saw them. And he was the guy who invented the rotoscope technology. But then
Ralph Bakshi took it and took it places it had never been before.
Now, who was he? He was a more modern guy, wasn't he?
Yeah, Fritz the Cat, Wizards,
okay,
the Lord
yeah.
of the Rings animation.
I remember Fritz the Cat. I remember going on a date to see that in a movie theater with the girl whose name...
Because it was an R-rated cartoon.
A girl whose name I will not mention, but she drove a Volkswagen Beetle, and we went up to the Shirley Duke shopping center to the cinema there where Fritz played for months. It was like a midnight showing or something, and we went, but before we went in, we sat in her little VW Beetle and smoked us a doobie, Bob, so that we'd be in the right frame of mind.
You injected the marijuanas?
Right into my main line, I did.
Right into your lung bag.
And I think that wasn't Fritz the Cat a Crumb, an R. Crumb creation? I'm pretty sure. He gave us Mr. Natural. I know that.
Yeah.
What does it mean, Mr. Natural? It don't mean
now,
shit.
Now, did he also give us Zippy the Pinhead?
No, I think that was someone else.
Yeah, it was. That was. Oh, dear God. Well, we just went down another one of those little weedy little trails that we find so often. Scott, yeah, damn it. But you got to give credit to George Conway where it's due. I mean, he and his Skeletor wife Kellyanne Conway maybe playing some creepy ass game that gets them off behind closed doors. Yuck. But he's got some zingers out there. First, earlier there was the line about Trump being the only man ever laughed off a continent. And then he decided to take a run at Matt Gaetz, who sits on the Judiciary Committee. And Matt Gaetz, in a moment, this is the stuff of which Titanic Tuesdays are made, but we'll have to deal with it today. He said today that you can impeach an ex-president.
No, you're making that up.
No, I'm not. Matt Gaetz today said you can impeach Barack Obama. Yeah, right now, tomorrow.
Jesus.
I don't know if he's Roman. I don't know if he's one of those hardcore conservative Roman Catholics that doesn't like Vatican II. But maybe he was thinking about the time that they dug up a dead pope and excommunicated him and chopped him into pieces and threw him in the Tiber.
I was trying to get the analogy for that level of stupid. That is industrial strength stupid, Bob.
I mean, Matt Gaetz tweeted in reply to someone else, namely Jake Sherman, who is at Politico and NBC News and MSNBC, who quoted Matt Gaetz, maybe it's a different president we should be impeaching, unquote. Jake Sherman said, we only have one president, so I'm not sure how this would work. And Matt Gaetz actually doubled down and replied to him, you actually can impeach a former president for what it's worth.
I'd love to see the paperwork on getting that underway.
It's breathtaking levels of stupidity.
First, they'd have to get Barack Obama up off the floor. He'd be laughing and rolling around.
And so George Conway picks up on it and says, I'm really starting to think that the House GOP caucus has some kind of an IQ cap the way some sports leagues have salary caps. by the way, note coming in from Cynthia. I just saw another outrage on CNN. I saw this earlier, too. Haven't read the story, but just saw the headline that George Zimmerman...
Oh, God.
...is suing Trayvon Martin's parents for $100 million. Jesus fucking H. Christ, I'm speechless. Yeah, I saw that earlier today, and it's utterly sickening. And because we don't know... Okay, there it is, from the Miami Herald. George Zimmerman, the neighborhood watch volunteer, yada, 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 is suing Martin's family, prosecutors, and others involved in the case he claims rested on false evidence, according to a copy of the suit sent to the media Wednesday. And, of course, there's always, you know, you pull the thread, and it always takes you places. Zimmerman is represented by Larry Klayman, a high-profile legal crusader, read nut job, tied to conservative causes and the founder of Judicial Watch before splitting with the activist group. It's filed in Polk County Circuit Court, citing information in a documentary about the case called the Trayvon Hoax. So this is all a way to get free publicity for a bullshit documentary. Seeks $100 million in civil damages, alleging defamation, abuse of civil process, and conspiracy. And speaking of bullshit documentaries, guess where Rudy is right now.
I love it when you make those noises. I have a word about Rudy in a moment, but go ahead. Where is he now, Bob?
Rudy Giuliani is in Ukraine.
Oh, yeah, 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 yeah.
He's in Ukraine filming a documentary about how Ukraine really did meddle in the elections.
Now, will this be produced and distributed by the same group who gave us the Clinton Chronicles?
I would not be surprised if it was.
What is this lawyer's name who's doing the Zimmerman case?
Larry Klayman. Look him up. He's a real Lulu. I mean, he's one of those types you want to chase with a butterfly net.
Why is he wasting his time with this nickel and dime stuff when you know any day Rudy's going under the bus and Donnie is going to need a new lawyer, personal lawyer? I think it would be a toss-up between old Larry there and Mark Levin. He's a constitutional expert. Mark Levin is. He'd make a great private attorney for Mr. Trump. If he can walk away from the big bucks long enough. Because if he signed on as, you're not going to give up your massively popular with the crazy people radio show to get sniffed by Donnie, sign the document to be the private lawyer of Mr. Trump and get stiffed and not get paid and stuff, Levin is no fool. He knows which side of the toast is buttered. Jesus. See, I knew that in my lifetime things would go batshit crazy, but I didn't know I would be this relatively young when it was starting to go full tilt boogie,
Yeah. Oh, what David in South Carolina Stan was alluding to earlier, melanoma has had a hissy.
Now, what is her major malfunction?
because Professor Carlin mentioned Barron in the hearing.
Oh, now I'm glad you brought that up. Now, if I had been the woman who was testifying, Ms. Carlin, I wouldn't have necessarily gone that way, but it was so far from being an attack on a minor child.
It was an apt reference.
Of course it was. And they got their panties in a big old Made in America bunch over it. People are fed up with the Trump show.
Well, here's what Melanoma said.
All right.
A minor child deserves privacy and should be kept out of politics. Pamela Carlin, you should be ashamed of your very angry and obviously biased public pandering and using a child to do it.
Woman, sit down. Here's a spoon. Have some Count Chocula.
Well, of course, Professor Carlin then immediately apologized.
Yeah, I know.
Can we stand our ground just once, just one fucking time? She did not invade Barron's goddamn fucking privacy by mentioning his goddamn fucking name. It is public knowledge that Melanoma had sex with someone and had a baby, and they named it Barron Trump, and that Nitwit Nero nominally acknowledges him to be his son. So, for all of those people out there who make the jokes about how Melanoma, she's some sort of victim or poor Melanoma. No, fuck Melanoma. Well, never mind. That doesn't have any, too many people have. When she says, Pamela Carlin, you should be ashamed of your very angry and obviously biased public pandering and using a child to do it. Fuck her. She didn't pander. Pandering has a very specific definition. Well, and frankly, Melanoma has probably had men in her life who pandered, okay?
Yeah.
It's a crime. That's all I'll say. She wasn't angry when she said it. But she's in, you know, she's as much of a bullshit artist fucking liar as her scumbag husband is.
The only possible damage.
And then Nitwit Nero retweeted it. I'm sure by now Professor Carlin is receiving goddamn death threats.
Probably, probably, given the state, I mean, the state of things of the world that we live in. But the only possible damage that it could do to the child is to be reminded of, I mean, you talk about a shitty existence as a child in a family in America. Can you imagine having Trump as your daddy? I can't even say it puts the fun in dysfunctional. I mean, it's that poor child is going to grow up. Hopefully he will
don't.
Get past
no, no, hold on. Hold on. Don't extend sympathy to any of them.
Well, we don't have any control over who we're birthed into, the circumstances.
Well, yeah,
the
I mean,
situation.
That's true. That's true. Ron Reagan Jr. turned out to be a pretty decent human being.
Yeah, he did. Well, and you know, Bob, earlier we were talking about these little side streams and things that we go into whenever we talk. And it must drive the Horn family crazy, you know, Googling and flipping through their big book of knowledge whenever I call in. But do you remember James Burke and a program that it was a British program that used to be on PBS back in the 80s, I guess, or 70s? Connections?
Not so much.
Oh, see if you, I don't know if it's streaming anywhere, but he would take a common everyday sort of object or situation and give a history, like the compass on a ship was one of them that he did. And he gave an entire history in the 1 hour program of how that came to be. And longitude and latitude and how back in the olden days before they could get a reliable compass and reliable clocks, you know. Oh, God, I can't even do justice to the program, Connections. And there was a spinoff called Connections 2. But that's what this show is like most days. You'll say something or you'll get an email from somebody and it'll jog something in your head. And the conversation just goes wherever it goes, and it still stays on track regardless of where it goes, because it's all, you know, everything is connected to everything else. And that's why, like you said before, it's so important for people to know stuff so that you're in on the joke, so to speak, so that you know what the references are about. By the way, the episode of Mad Men that I mentioned about the JFK assassination is called The Grown-Ups. And I'm sure fans of the show remember it. But it's on Netflix if you want to check it out. If you weren't around in 63 or weren't old enough to know what was going on, it'll give you a sense of what an impact that event had on America and even the world. And everything did change, Bob.
It did. I know.
I can name you 24 things that had that not happened, things that would have played out an entirely different way. And it is interesting to think in terms of some parallel universe where it rained heavy and they had to keep the bubble top up, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not a big what-if-er, but sometimes it's interesting to play with that. I just want to know how the fuck we ended up with Trump. I mean, I was gonna say this before. I think that the American public.
Well, hold on.
Go ahead.
We wound up with Trump as the natural progression of an idiotic process.
Well, there is that.
It was H.L. Mencken a century ago, maybe.
Yeah.
who said that eventually the American people will get their fondest wish and an absolute idiot will become president. And it took a while. And we had to learn the hard way. You know, we spent 4 years praying for George H.W. Bush because there was an idiot in the vice president's office and his name was Dan Quayle and he spelled potato with an E.
Yeah, I remember that.
And he said on the way to Latin America that he wished he'd studied more Latin.
Yeah, I remember that.
And we thought, Jesus, well, we dodged a bullet with that one. And along comes W. Holy fuck.
Yeah.
Well, okay, we got past him. We can't be there can't be any more stupid than that. And the goddess of irony just goes, fuck you, I got him backed up a mile.
Goddess of irony said, want to bet?
Oh, by the way, just a note, I got to get these in here because we're running out of time. A note from Darlene in Connecticut. Professor Pam apologized in a dignified way, but I think it was incumbent upon the Dems to take that opportunity to agree that the children of presidents should not be brought into dirty politics, just like Malia, Sasha, Chelsea, and even the W daughters were in the recent to distant past. Melanoma pulled a Hillary. Remember when HR spoke out against any nasty attacks on Chelsea's look as a pubescent teen? Well, yeah. And I also remember when Rush Limbaugh referred to Chelsea as the White House dog.
Jesus. Sadly, I do too.
Yeah. Somebody should respond to Melanoma's tweet saying, now do Rush Limbaugh referring to Chelsea as the White House dog. We'll wait. Yeah. Scott, I got to get out of here, my friend.
I know you do, but let me leave you with a happy thought, as I so often do. There is always a silver lining. I think a lot of people in this republic have had their fill of the Trump show, and they've had their fill of House members and senators on the Republican side who've had to be apologists and explainers for Trump. And I think the people are looking at this situation very carefully, Bob, and God knows we're sick of Trump himself. And I think that November of 2020 is going to be the harbinger of good things. We will turn a corner. And this
irrepressible optimist, you, I hope you're right. But I live in a place where they just love Trump. He's making America great.
But if you think of some of the worst circumstances that you personally have ever been in, or dumb mistakes that you've made in your early years, and we all have them. God knows I could write a book about my poor choices. But these are circumstances that, having gone through them, you learn some valuable lessons, you gain some useful insights, but more often than not, you don't repeat those errors in judgment. And maybe it was a requirement for us as our national mindset to finally, you talk about the goddess of irony, to finally have someone who was irretrievably stupid and inept and corrupt and just all manner of horrible in that place of responsibility with his grubby little hands close to the levers of power. Maybe it was required so that we never, ever do anything like that again. Or if we do, it's not until years later.
Well, we certainly didn't learn that lesson out of Nixon.
No, we didn't, but we
because
did go...
Because Nixon's gone in, what, 74?
74, August 9th.
Yeah, and we're inaugurating Ronald Reagan less than 7 years later, who goes on to run an administration that was so criminal it made Nixon's look like playtime.
Oh, I know. But see... That's part of the whole, okay? maybe this whole episode will cause us to choose wisely come November of 2020. And not just the president, not just the president, Bob. House members, a third of the Senate, our local mayor and city council or governor, if those races occur where people live, we have got to take charge of our own futures. And it may take decades to undo the damage that has been wrought over the last 40, 45
and
years.
We may not have decades, Scott. That's my only caveat.
We may not. But if we can at least get, step one is getting the fucking train back on the goddamn track.
Yeah, step one is sobering up and going to the first meeting.
Well, yes. And what did Obama say a lot of times about having a country being driven into the ditch? We are definitely in the fucking ditch.
As someone who has dealt with that in the real world, I can tell you it's not a pleasant situation to be in.
No. But what I'm saying is, perhaps that something good can come of all this, is what I'm saying. But it will require our full attention, our wise choices, and action like we've never had action before.
And I don't know if this is a country capable of that. Sorry, well, I'm just a little ray of fucking sunshine.
I know.
But I got to get out of here, Scott. I got to get out of here.
Do. But I'm just telling you, don't give up hope, people.
Oh, no, don't give up, and never mind the hope. Don't give up working.
Well, that's what I mean.
Remember the one worthwhile thing that Calvin Coolidge ever said: nothing can take the place of persistence.
Yes, and they'll take the future when they pull it out of my cold, dead hand. You've got to have that attitude. You've got to be hardcore about your own fucking life. I feel like Howard Beale in Network.
I know.
I'm a human being, God damn it. Sir, open the window.
Scott, I gotta go.
I gotta go, Bob.
Don't
you do this to me. All right, I'll go away now.
All right, later. Bye.
Take care, man. Bye.
Our buddy Scott. He's been away from the program for a few days, and there's just so much to work through. But I got some emails that I got to share before we get out the door. Cowbell to Lee in New York for a non-obligatory Gilligan's Island reference in reference to the intelligence levels. Gilligan cleaned the compass because it had loose pieces and would spin. Yes. Meanwhile, Matt in San Francisco says, I don't get it. I've been in supervisory and the boss role, overseeing multiple units of business with overall multi-millions of dollars in annual sales. I say this for reference, not in a braggadocious fashion. In the business world, I've fired many individuals for doing far less than 45. I do not understand how a small group of very stupid people have grabbed the reins of power and are making us all dumber as a result. Well, you may not understand, Matt, but the fact of the matter is, it doesn't work in any other arena save the presidency. We all know, especially people in business, about the Peter principle. Namely, that a person will rise to the highest level of their own incompetence. Well, because of the way the presidency is structured in the Constitution, it makes it possible to evade the Peter principle. There is no way that Donald Trump ever should have been near the reins of immense power that is the presidency, let alone, I mean, hell, he never should have been allowed to run anything more complicated than a hot dog cart in New York, in Times Square. But the Constitution creates a situation in which, by virtue of the operation of a racist anachronism from our slavery past, the will of the people can be thwarted to put a moron into the White House. The Electoral College worked exactly opposite the way it was supposed, it was designed to be to operate. And hearing those Republicans all day long today, the president, they're trying to overturn the will of the people. Well, no, if you get right down to it, you fuckwits, we're trying to trying to right the will of the people, because there's 3 million more Americans. 63 million people voted for Donald Trump, and they never bring up that 67 voted for Hillary. I heard one of those clowns say that, hey, won by an electoral college landslide. Well, that's like saying that he won because of slavery. It's not like that. It is exactly that. And one final note on the way out the door. This comes from Lady B, and I love giving her the last word. Going back to what I said about my granddaughter in social studies, and I wasn't being mean about it. I hope you understand. I want her to, she's a brilliant young woman, and I hope she studies whatever she wants to study and is able to go to college and even beyond to become, to develop her own expertise. But Lady B says, for every great song, there are great songwriters and musicians. For every great movie, there are great scriptwriters, actors, directors, and cinematographers. For every life-changing book, there are great writers. Almost anyone can do those things, but there are some of us who are born to do absolutely nothing else. I envy folks who are good at math and science, like my RN twin sister. It seems their lives are pretty straightforward. They go by instinct and look for things that are balanced and linear and make sense. They do see shades of gray, but that's for personal relationships. Work is simply that, work, and very little of what they do completely defines them. Creative folks are a mixed bag. Imagine if Gene Roddenberry had been an accountant or stayed a cop. Not a bad gig, but he was inspired, no, compelled, to create Star Trek, and what a glorious decision it was. Now that we have accountants that work for the film company, that churns out the endless sequels that created a profitable franchise empire, Roddenberry created work for all kinds of people, all because he decided to succumb to the pull of his creative side. And there's your second obligatory Star Trek reference. Lady B continues, I clean buildings and I'm still a disc jockey and a writer. It took me 50 years to realize that not being able to do one thing for a living didn't negate my ability to do the other. Most importantly, it wasn't the ultimate definition of who I was. I'm all those things. I think that's pretty cool. And to my bemusement, others seem to think so too. I know we do. So whether I'm pushing a mop in a bucket or queuing a cart off the rack, I have the intellectual and physical abilities to do both, and that's all right with me. I hope your granddaughter finds happiness in whatever she does, or at least feels a reasonable peace with her career choices as an adult. We need all kinds of thinkers, creators, and makers, no matter how they contribute. And who knows, she may channel her granddad's creative side and end up writing a few things herself. I'm grateful I listen to a guy who acknowledges his purpose despite having to scrape by from time to time. Stay a dreamer, you outwardly cynical man. In your own way, you've probably made more of a difference than you'll ever know. Your job really is to shed light and not to master. Right now, you're shedding more light than a million candles. And we're all listening intently. Thank you, Lady B. Thank you. Notes like yours and the others that I get from members of the community are a big part of how I know that the choices that went into creating this radio network were in fact right choices. So thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air. Thanks to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in this ongoing conversation, however you so choose to do. Thanks, Joan, for knocking us halfway down for tomorrow. Tomorrow's fundraising goal is only $100. Thank you. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you. Let me look here just to check. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thanks to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thank you to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for human rights and environmental justice in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Later, y'all.